And when I look back over my life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you got to understand something, brothers and sisters, and this is critical. Listen to me. Father knows your beginning, and he knows your end. He knows your end from your beginning. The fact that he allowed you to go through some stuff that is different than what he allowed me to go through, if we understand that everything we are going through is to prepare us for where he's taking us or where he's maneuvering us to, there is nothing that happens in your life that is not part of the preparation for the ministry calling that the Almighty has called you to. Nothing. I don't care if you've been abused. I don't care if you've been raped. I don't care if you've been abandoned. I don't care if you've been adopted. I don't care what has happened to you. If you truly believe he works all things together for the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose, then he's allowing everything you experience, everything you go through, the good, the bad, the ugly, all for the preparation for where he's taking you. You may not fully understand why he's allowing that to happen to you. You may not understand why he hasn't come to your aid when you called out to him, because understand this, whatever you are going through, he's either sending you through it or he's allowing it to happen, and it's all for purpose, and he's going to work it all out for you. This is why you can't be ashamed of where you came from. You can't. This is why your testimony is so powerful. There are too many people who have had such negative experience, they want to try to forget the whole thing, block it out, don't embarrass by it. Listen, all that stuff Father used and will use, all those things that he brought you through, I don't care what it is. Maybe you came up raped. Maybe you were some point transgender. Maybe you were some point a lesbian. It doesn't matter what it was. When Father brings you into the knowledge of truth, he opened your eyes to where you can distinguish his truth from the lies that you have lived with, the lies that you have believed, the hurts, the abuses, and the pain. Then now, with your eyes open, guess who your ministry might be to?
Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the book of Exodus. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. As the adopted son of the Egyptian Pharaoh's daughter, Moses was nursed and raised by his Hebrew mother. After Moses was weaned, he was delivered to Pharaoh's daughter's house. Moses grew up knowing he was Hebrew, even though he had an Egyptian name and was raised in an Egyptian household by an Egyptian woman. Moses' Hebrew brothers and sisters were slaves to the Egyptians and were under harsh bondage as foretold by Jehovah to Abraham the patriarch. When Moses was grown, his Hebrew identity conflicted with his Egyptian upbringing, leading him to making a decision that branded him as a murderer. This caused Moses to flee to Midian, away from both his Hebrew brothers and sisters and the Egyptians he was raised among. Join me in this intriguing journey, intertwining the Hebrew, Egyptian, and Midianite cultures as we follow a conflicted Moses in today's study, Moses the Murderer. So, let's study.
In Exodus chapter number 2 is where we are today. And as we looked from the beginning and in the introduction and then last week and the week before, we come to realize that the timeline between Joseph dying, the people of that generation dying, and Moses being born consisted of a couple of hundred or more years. And we're going to see here today that Moses seems to have his life laid out before us in about three phases. Now, as the son of the Egyptian Pharaoh's daughter, Moses was nursed and raised by his Hebrew mother. We saw that last week, where she was actually paid to raise her own child. After Moses was weaned, he was delivered to Pharaoh's daughter's house. And now Moses grew up knowing that he was Hebrew, even though he was given an Egyptian name, even though he was raised in an Egyptian house and by an Egyptian woman. He was given an Egyptian name, even though he was Hebrew. His brothers and sisters were slaves. And we're going to, as we continue through Exodus, we're going to find where his brother, his biological brother and biological sister was slaves, and all of his Israelite brothers and sisters were in bondage. And they were in bondage in Egypt and were under harsh bondage, as we know Father spoke to Abraham and told him hundreds of years earlier. When Moses was grown, his Hebrew identity conflicted with his Egyptian upbringing. Because he was brought up by a Hebrew woman and lived in an Egyptian home, Moses knew his Hebrew identity. And this led him to make a decision that branded him. It caused Moses to have to flee from Egypt to Midian, away from both his Hebrew brothers and sisters and the Egyptians he was raised among. So the life of Moses can be broken down into three phases of 40-year periods. The first phase is from birth to his coming of age at 40 years, raised as Pharaoh's daughter's son. His second phase, from 40 years old to 80 years old, he lived in the land of Midian. And then phase three, from 80 years old to his death. This is where Father called him, sent him back into Egypt, brought him, used him to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt. And then they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. Now, in Acts chapter 7, if you remember when we were going through Acts chapter 7, Stephen shared some things with us about Moses. And this is the first phase of Moses' 40 years as he was raised in Pharaoh's daughter's house. Now, what's interesting is in verse 22 of Acts chapter 7, Stephen lets us know that Moses was learned in all wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in word and in deeds. So Moses was a very learned individual. He was brought up with the best of teachers and tutors. And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. Now, I don't know if he visited them before him being 40 years old. I suspect he did, because if Moses' mother nursed him and then weaned him, he knew he had a sister. And based on what we read, he knew he was Hebrew. He knew he was Hebrew. He knew the Hebrew people were in bondage. And I suspect that he periodically interacted with them. So when he was a full 40 years old, it came to his heart to visit. In verse 24, Acts chapter 7, it says, "And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian." Now, you got to ask yourself something here, because even though Moses had taken on the Egyptian identity, he was a Hebrew at heart. For him to defend a slave against a fellow Egyptian tells us that Moses was connected to his Hebrew roots. For he supposed his brethren would have understood, according to verse 25, how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they did not. Now, of course, Stephen is speaking long after the fact. And I suspect that the Hebrews knew that Moses was Hebrew, being raised as an Egyptian, Because as we go through these verses, you kind of get the impression that there is some information about who Moses is, because Moses fully understands that these are his people. And if he fully understands that these are his people, then somehow those people knew he was one of them, even though he was being raised up as an Egyptian. Verse 26, and the next day he showed himself unto them as they strove. Now, here's another situation. First of all, there's the Egyptian beating up the Hebrew. Now, you got a Hebrew on Hebrew crime taking place. So he shows up and would have set them at one again, saying, brothers, why do you wrong one to another? Now, notice what it says here in verse 27, but he that did his neighbor wrong. So the wrongdoer turned on Moses. All right? This is what he's saying here. And saying, who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Now, I got to tell you that this audacity of this Hebrew speaking to an Egyptian already in his mind had reduced Moses' status as an Egyptian to a common Hebrew. And this is one of the sad things about people who, you know, they have a tendency to respect and honor people of other nations or other races, in the sense when they are supervisors or over them and have a tendency to try to reduce them or to render them common. Look, bro, you one of us. Come on now. Yeah, but I'm still your boss. Yeah, I understand that. You know, and next thing you know, you find yourself having to deal. Now, most people outside of certain folks who have lived in oppressed statuses wouldn't identify what I'm saying. If you've never lived in an oppressed status, then you wouldn't know that someone who has made it out and now is in the place of the man. You know, even though they're the man, you still one of us, man. Don't forget where you came from. That kind of mentality. Instead of honoring and respecting the role or the title that person may be walking in. So it says, but he that did his neighbor wrong thrust him away, saying, who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Will thou kill me? You gonna kill me like you did that Egyptian yesterday? Then fled Moses at this saying and was a stranger in the land of Midian, where he begat two sons. Now we're gonna see why he fled in Exodus, but here Stephen is simply telling the story, but he's not giving the whole story. He's just giving his version of it. In verse 11, chapter 2, it says, it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown. So we know that this grown, this term Moses was grown, is that when Moses was about 40 years old, that he went out into his brethren and looked on their burdens. And he spied an Egyptian, smiting the Hebrew, one of his brethren. Now you got to get this. Moses was raised as an Egyptian. So from that perspective, the Egyptians were his brothers as well, because that's how he was raised. But he identified with the Hebrew as one of his brethren also. And that had to have been a difficult place for Moses to be in a position of power while your people were in a position of bondage. So Moses, the murderer. Not only did Moses kill a man, but he tried to cover up his murder. He tried to cover up his crime. Verse 12, and he looked this way and that way. So if you see it, Moses see what's going on, and now he purposed in his heart what he's going to do. This is premeditated. So he looked to see if there's any witnesses, to see if there's anybody who is about to see what he's about to do. Now, what's interesting is that there's always witnesses to wrongdoing. The things that are done in darkness somehow find their way into light. And so Moses, now he saw that there was no man. When he looked to see if there was anybody who would see what he was doing, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Now imagine, if you would, that he saw this abuse taking place. And from what we're going to read, this Hebrew witnessed something. Even though Moses looked around, and I would assume that he would think that, look, man, I'm trying to help you, right? Again, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Now, Moses looked and saw no witnesses, so he killed the Egyptian, and it appears the Hebrews spoke amongst themselves what Moses had done, indicating there was at least one witness, most likely the Hebrew who was present, that Moses defended, told other Hebrews. However, somehow Moses justified the killing of the Egyptian. He justified the killing. It's something how you can put your mind to something and then justify your behavior, even though you know that what you have done is wrong. And people do this all the time. He justified the killing of the Egyptian, another ethnic group, for smiting a Hebrew, one of his own, but could not justify his brethren, fellow Hebrews, smiting each other. It's what, you know, people talk about black on black crime. This is a Hebrew on Hebrew crime, or white on white crime, or Hispanic on Hispanic. The fact of the matter is that people who are of one group, of one ethnicity, can look at another ethnic group as less than them and be justified in doing them harm. This is the case here. Moses assumed he could kill a man and get away with it. Now, back in my former days, I could be so angry to where I could contemplate how to do away with a body. I don't know. I'm just telling you about me. I don't know how y'all is. But there's been times in my former life that I've been so angry that I've actually thought out how to make somebody disappear. Fortunately for me, you know, my mama and daddy taught me enough to where I didn't cross that line. But there's been times, if murder in the heart was a death sentence, I probably would have, you know, I'd be on death row or dead. Verse 13, Exodus 2. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together, and he said to him that did wrong, wherefore smitest thy brethren? Now, when we read this and we jump ahead in Acts chapter 7 like we did, what we see here is Stephen, and Stephen would be no different than the other brothers during the book of Acts, was very familiar with the Old Testament. Why? Because that's all they had. They didn't have a New Testament. They knew the law. They knew Genesis, Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Leviticus. They knew this. And here it is, Stephen is telling the story, going all the way back and bringing the brothers fast forward to them while they are contemplating taking him out because he's zealous for the things of the Most High. And so he said unto him that did wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now notice what he said. He feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now, understand something. Before he did it, what did he do? He looked this way and he looked that way. What is he looking for? He's looking for witnesses. Is there anybody who's going to see me? So he assumed when he did it, there were no witnesses, until now he's confronted by his Hebrew brothers. And now he's afraid, saying, surely this thing is known. By virtue of being the son of Pharaoh, he was a prince and a judge over the Hebrews. But ultimately, Jehovah would make him the judge. The audacity of the Hebrew speaking to Moses in the manner was only a foreshadow of what was to come and how many of the Hebrews would speak to Moses when Jehovah ordained him as their prince and judge. Here's something, brothers and sisters, I'm telling you, just as sure as there's a nose on my face. Parents, if you let your children talk back to you when they're little, they will talk back to you when they get old. You look at this example. This is a slave talking to one of the house of Egypt. He's talking to one of Pharaoh's house. So what is he saying? He's saying that he has disregard for authority. But in his heart, it's like, I can justify my disregard for your authority because I know you are a murderer. So I got something on you, buddy. I got something on you. But here's the thing. If your child will disrespect you in your house, imagine who they will disrespect when they leave your house. And what does that say? If you let them disrespect you, you are enabling a disrespectful person. And that outside of your house is going to cause problems for them because society is not going to put up with their disrespect. You might. But when they get outside your home, somebody going to put a knot upside their head. Hello? The man, no, hear me right. I'm not in any way trying to justify police brutality. But when I look at some of these videos and I see the behaviors of some of these individuals and the way they act, if I was a cop, I'd probably want to take them down myself. When you have disrespectful people just totally rejecting your authority, it's like, how you think this is going to go? What you have, if you've got a person out there disrespecting that authority, I can imagine what kind of disrespect they had in their homes at home. See, when you are a parent and you raise your child to respect authority, they will not be talking to their teachers that way. They will not be talking to the police that way. They will not be talking to their neighbors or anybody of age, especially if you teach them how to respect elders. If you don't teach them how to respect elder, and you are the elder in your home, you're the pastor in your home, the apostle, the overseer, whatever you want to call yourself, in your house, the buck stops with you. And if the buck don't stop with you and you allow them to disregard or disrespect your authority in your home, you are opening yourself up for some serious heartache. And I'm saying, if you don't put the fear of God in them when they're little, when they get old, they will not have the fear of God. And the world outside your house know how to have some come to Jesus meetings with them. The world ain't gonna take that disrespect. You hear what I'm saying? Because there's some folks out there badder than them. The gospel among the Hebrew reaches Pharaoh's ears, or the gossip, let me say that, not the gospel, the gossip that was going amongst the Hebrews finally reached Pharaoh's ears, and he sought to slay his daughter's son, although based on the timeline, it could have been a different Pharaoh. And so Moses became a fugitive from Egyptian justice. Now, when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. And what this suggests to me, now we don't know, but imagine what kind of man this would be that is about to kill, that is looking for opportunity to kill his grandson. Unless it's not his grandson. Unless he's already got some issues that, hey, you know, that's a Hebrew child who should have been dead long time ago. And you defied me and brought him in the house. And it's like, you know, okay. Because I can't help but thinking the girl, the Pharaoh's daughter, knew it was a Hebrew. And it's like, okay, if my daughter brings me a child and I've been around her and I haven't noticed 9 months of pregnancy, there's just a lot of questions that go on, and these questions are not necessarily posed. So I suspect, I'm not sure, that this could have been, because remember now, she took this child out of the river when the child was an infant, and the mother couldn't hold it no more, somewhere around 3 months or somewhere in that period of time. And now Pharaoh's daughter sends the child back to the mother to be brought up. And so possibly weaning about 2, 3, maybe 4 years old. I don't know how long that was, but this is some 40 years ago. That's 40 years ago. So here now, Moses is 40 years old. And in that 40 year span, was there a Pharaoh who was a Pharaoh for 40 years? That's a long time to rule. So, phase two, Moses from 40 years old to 80 years old in the land of Midian. This is Moses' second 40 years. Now, Acts 7 says, and when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai an angel of Jehovah in a flame of fire in a bush. Now, we're going to get into that in chapter 3. But what I'm trying to point out here is that at the age of 40, Moses seemingly slew the Hebrew, and then he ran. And the interesting thing is you can read, well, let's just read it. Let's get into phase two. Well, the next phase, of course, after phase two is 80 years old. This is when he goes and he brings the children of Israel out. But here we go in verse 16. Now the priest of Midian, so Moses has fled, and he comes into Midian. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. So how many children did the priest of Midian have? They were at least 7. Y'all smart. Y'all smart. All right. So again, in verse 17, and the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Now in verse 18, it says, and when they came to Reuel, their father. So now we know the priest of Midian's name is what? Reuel, their father. He said, how is it that you are come so soon today? So now it's like, okay, he looks at his clock. He knew that they were early, right? So he's got them on some kind of timer. We don't know what kind of method of time, how they were measuring time, but we assume that there was some kind of sundial or watching the sun or knowing when it was, you know, I think it's easy to identify when it's high noon. But if you watch the phases long enough, you kind of begin to identify what time of day it is from the sun. And he says, you've come so soon today. Now, Reuel is the name of the priest of Midian. He had 7 daughters, but he was called by several names. In the verse we just saw, his name was Reuel, the priest of Midian. And then we know that there's a place where he's called Jethro, and then it's Reuel, but it's spelled a little different. So Exodus 3:1, it says, now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. But in chapter 2, it's what? Reuel. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of Elohim, even to Horeb. So here we're getting some geography. Of course, this is several thousand years ago, and we know that cities changed names, like Salem became Jerusalem and other places. And anybody who have gone into the land of Israel, you will know that they have markers of cities where the city is no longer there. But then they have other cities that is named after that city, a few kilometers to the south, a few kilometers to the north or the east or the west. And where the ancient city was, they will have some kind of a marker saying, this is where the ancient city was. It is no longer here. But, you know, you go into another city, and this is all over the land of Israel, which makes it difficult to identify the ancient cities, with the exception of some excavation. Numbers 10:29, it says, and Moses said unto Hobab, the son is Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law. So what do we see here? Those seven sisters had a brother, at least one. Now, for many, that would be something you just learned. How many of you all know that the sisters had a brother? Okay. And so Moses says, we are journeying unto the place of which Jehovah said, I will give it you. Come, thou with us, and we will do thee good. For Jehovah has spoken good concerning Israel. Now, what we didn't identify is that, well, let's jump back here to Genesis chapter number 25. In Genesis chapter number 25, then again Abraham took a wife, and the name was Keturah. And she bare him Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shua. So what do we see here? That Abraham took this Keturah to be his wife, and she bare him a son named Midian, and from Midian came the Midianites. From Midian came the Midianites. So now Moses is in the land of his ancestor Abraham. He is about to engage in one of Abraham's descendants through Keturah. Now, understand something. Abraham was Hebrew. When he married Keturah, when he took that wife and she bare him children, what did she bear him? She bare children from the seed of Abraham, the Hebrew. What would that have made them? Even though they were in the land of Midian. Now, understand something. Abraham taught his children the instructions of the Most High. He taught them. That's why the Bible says he was chosen. And even to this day, brothers and sisters, we have to understand something. There are individuals who claim their bloodline through Ishmael back to Abraham thousands of years later, who are still adhering to some of the laws and rules and regulations Abraham taught thousands of years ago. In fact, the closest thing to the Hebrew Jew is the Ishmael or the Ishmaelite or the Muslim. Their names, their languages, the land in which they live. And they identify that they are descendants of the same man and identify the Israelites as their neighbors and even as cousins and brethren. The Midianites were no different. The fact that Jethro, Reuel, was a Midianite priest, then one of the questions would be, what would their religion be? Because Moses, who has now, understand this, Moses, who has now been called in Numbers chapter 10, verse 29, who have been called to go into Egypt, bring the children of Israel out of Egypt, have been instructed in the commandments and given the Torah, given the law, and helping the people understand they're not to worship idols or to bow down to gods, is inviting his brother-in-law to travel with them into the land of promise. It gives you a little insight into how he viewed his brother-in-law's faith. There seemed to have been some commonality there. And as we continue to read, one thing we're going to know is that Moses' wife understood circumcision better than he did. Now, we don't know what kind of priest Jethro was, other than he was a priest of Midian. But we do know that Midian was a descendant of Abraham who understood the Almighty in such a way that he was considered a friend of the Creator. So he says, "We are journeying into the place of which Jehovah said, I will give it you. Come with us, and we will do thee good." So we know that Reuel had at least one son named Hobab, Moses' brother-in-law. And now Moses, to this Midianite, looked like and was considered to be an Egyptian. Verse 19. So now they're at home talking to their dad. And he says, "Where is he? Why are you here so early?" And they said, an Egyptian, not a Hebrew, not an Israelite, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. Why would she consider him to be an Egyptian? Possibly because of the way he dressed. Maybe because of the language. Now, here you have an Egyptian. Now, we already know, according to Acts 7, that Moses was quite learned. He was very well learned. And Moses more than likely spoke the language of the land and the surrounding people. And he said unto his daughters, "And where is he?" Now, you all, this man has been there. He has defended you. What happened to him? Why is it that you have left the man? Where's your hospitality? Call him that he may eat bread. So now Moses is given the daughter of the priest. And Moses, verse 21, was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. So now understand that Keturah was the woman that Abraham married, who most likely was a descendant of Ham, most likely. And now she gives Abraham children. And now Moses is about to marry or is given one of the descendants of Abraham to be his wife. Moses has two sons, but here we see where she bare him the first of those two sons and called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a strange land." Now, the thing about the second phase of Moses' life, that 40 years between 40 and 80, is to think that within a couple of verses, 40 years have expired. I think it's hard sometimes when we read the Bible to take account of the time, because for me, and we're not going to do this tonight, we're going to continue on, but during this 40-year period, I'm trying to find verses of, okay, well, what happened during the 40 years that Moses lived in the land of Midian, because there's not a whole lot that is right there on the surface. But this is 40 years. Just like he was raised in Pharaoh's house almost 40 years, there's not a whole lot there. But how many of you in this room have not lived 40 years yet? Let me see your hand. You're not 40 years old yet. So that's a lot of years, folks. 40 years is enough time to grow up, go through elementary, middle, and high school, go to college, get an associate's, a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD, get married and raise a family, and still not be 40 years old. That's a long time. And we have very little from the scriptures. Thankfully, you know, as we saw in Acts chapter 7, we get an overview. But there are some other pieces that are there. And the reason I'm doing this is that I'm trying to get you to just think about this 40-year period that Moses is in Jethro's house, operating amongst his family, raising or caring for his flock before the Almighty call him. Moses is 80 years old when the Almighty finally decide to call him into ministry. 80. But during this entire 80-year period, there are things that are going on in his life and in his world that is all part of the preparation. And this is why it is important for us to have some kind of a understanding, no matter how shallow or brief it may be, into Moses's upbringing, Moses's way of thinking, Moses' diverse culture that he's familiar with, because he's going to have to maneuver through a bunch of different races, nationalities, ethnic groups. He's got to learn how to hear the Almighty's voice. He's got to learn how to distinguish the Almighty's voice from these others, because you got to know something. And what we didn't point out is Moses, the name Moses, we know that that's an Egyptian name. It's not a Hebrew name, folks. And Moses is like in the Egyptian language, it means born. So it would be like Bat in Hebrew, or Ben. Well, for girls, yeah. Ben, where it's the son of. Well, Moses is born of. And being that the Pharaoh's daughter named him, it is almost like the surname of gods. Tutmosis, Imosis, Ramesses. And you'll see that many of the Egyptian gods had this pre and then Moses behind that. Born of the gods, or born of. And that's how his name was given to him, which suggests very strongly, brothers and sisters, that while Moses was in Egypt, raised up in Pharaoh's house, that Moses was exposed to the Egyptian gods even more so than the Hebrew, because when Moses brings them out, the Hebrews start making images of Egyptian gods. And so Moses has a lot of knowledge. He would have more knowledge about the gods because he's learning this in his education. Being brought up in Pharaoh's daughter's house. Being taught, tutored. Moses is learning and understanding the gods, understanding the priesthood, the priest system, the magicians, the sorcerers, and all of them, Because Father is instructing him or allowing him to go through that instruction, because at some point he's going to have to face it. He's going to have to confront it. And when I look back over my life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you got to understand something, brothers and sisters, and this is critical. Listen to me. This is so critical. Father knows your beginning, and he knows your end. He knows your end from your beginning. The fact that he allowed you to go through some stuff that is different than what he allowed me to go through, if we understand that everything we are going through is to prepare us for where he's taking us or where he's maneuvering us to. There is nothing that happens in your life that is not part of the preparation for the ministry calling that the Almighty has called you to. Nothing. I don't care if you've been abused. I don't care if you've been raped. I don't care if you've been abandoned. I don't care if you've been adopted. I don't care what has happened to you. If you truly believe he works all things together for the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose, then he's allowing everything you experience, everything you go through, the good, the bad, the ugly, all for the preparation for where he's taking you. You may not fully understand why he's allowing that to happen to you. You may not understand why he hasn't come to your aid when you called out to him, because understand this, whatever you are going through, he's either sending you through it or he's allowing it to happen, and it's all for purpose, and he's going to work it all out for you. This is why you can't be ashamed of where you came from. You can't. This is why your testimony is so powerful. There are too many people who have had such negative experience, they want to try to forget the whole thing, block it out, don't embarrass by it. Listen, all that stuff Father used and will use. All those things that he brought you through, I don't care what it is. Maybe you came up raped. Maybe you were some point transgender. Maybe you were some point a lesbian. Maybe you were some, it doesn't matter what it was. When Father brings you into the knowledge of truth, he opened your eyes to where you can distinguish his truth from the lies that you have lived with, the lies that you have believed, the hurts, the abuses, and the pain. Then now, with your eyes open, guess who your ministry might be to? See, let me show you something that is here. When Moses came to the defense of that Hebrew while he was in Egypt garb in the land of Egypt, that was in his heart to do. Father had already put in his heart a heart for the Hebrew people. So when he came to call him and said, Moses, now I'm calling you to send you back to the place that you've run from to deliver the people that you tried to deliver when you were there, but you did it your way. You see, for all of y'all who want to do it your way, there's your way and there's his way. Now, I know Frank Sinatra, he got famous. I did it my way. Listen, there's your way and then there's his way. Moses tried it his way and it caused him to find his way to the backside of the desert. Now, that whole backside of the desert process, when Moses is out there caring for his father-in-law's sheep, Father is preparing him to care for his sheep. And I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, it doesn't matter where you've come from. Now, you could be ashamed. When I stood here and I said that there was a time in my life to where I contemplated how to get rid of a body. That was the old me. That's not who I am. But as who I am, knowing who I was, I can understand someone who would have that kind of anger. I can understand somebody who is at that place to where they want to take somebody out. And all I have to do is remember. I can say to that person, listen, I know what that feels like. Been there. I can tell you the story. And in that particular case, I might. Just so the person can understand. See, I've stood here and exposed my old man so many times to where people can relate. Because you know what? That's exactly how I felt. That's exactly how I thought. That's exactly what I was going through. I understand that. And in that particular case, looking at even then when I didn't know the Almighty was involved and engaged, now I can look back and see. Because I was at that place. What stopped me? What stopped you? We have crossed so many lines. Lines we didn't think we would ever cross. But there's some lines we didn't cross. We may have thought about it, but maybe almost there. But there are things, brothers and sisters, if you look back, you will see how Father has been with you the whole process. He showed himself up at Moses' birth. In fact, no, he showed up with Moses' ancestors. And I just really want to encourage you, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you're going through, Father know how to work it all to your good. In fact, he's allowing it. And this is the thing. You have to just let him have his way. Because that's really the only option you have. You can fight, you can resist, you can run, but there ain't no getting away. The only option you have is to surrender and allow his will to be done in your life. Verse 23, and it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And they cried, and their cry came up unto Elohim by reason of the bondage. And the process of time here is somewhere around 40 years, if it's the same Pharaoh. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob, with Israel. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and he remembered, or he respect unto them, or he thought about them. He is like, it's not that he wasn't thinking about them all this time. It's just that there's, Father, allow us to go through stuff. And hopefully, when we've gone through it and we've learned the things that we should learn, then he comes to our rescue. Now, we're going to see something even in this, because here it is. They were in Egypt 430 years to the day, right? And the day he brought them out, they start complaining. It's amazing how we cry out to the Almighty for help. And then he comes to our aid and we complain. He didn't do it the way we would have done it. Didn't do it the way we wanted him to do it. Or whatever the case may be. Because we want to orchestrate our own deliverance. We want to orchestrate our own healing. We want to orchestrate our own salvation. We want to orchestrate our lives. We want it done our way. And if it doesn't go our way, we got some issues with that. Well, we have to learn to allow him to have his way. And I'm going to tell you something, brothers and sisters, it's easy to say with your mouth. You can give the Almighty lip service, but your heart be someplace else, because what is in your heart is going to ultimately come out your mouth. But Father already see it before it comes out. And after 430 years to the day, it's like, okay, it seemed like they would have learned, but for some reason or another, there's something about bondage, hurt, pain, being taken advantage of. If you don't watch it, it will change who you're supposed to be. Abuse can change you. Letdowns, disappointments, and rejection, all that stuff, it can change you. It can make you something other than. And if you're not careful, you'll get so hard-hearted in that to where even when the Almighty comes to deliver you, you can take that hardness of heart, that stiff-neckedness with you, just like they did. Amen. That's the end of this particular teaching, and we'll pick this up next week, Father willing, in Exodus chapter number 3.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.